Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Well, Don't Just Stand There. I'm Johan, and today we're going to be talking about Volkswagen cheating on its emissions tests in the U.S. by using a software hack. Facebook like buttons start tracking you even when you don't click them, wherever they're located. And iOS's recent ability to adblock on mobile raises ethical questions. Recorded live in Portland, Oregon, let's start the show. All right, I gotta start with this one. I've talked a little bit about cars getting hacked by professional hackers, but what about when the auto manufacturer hacks their own car or adjusts their own internal software in order to fool somebody else, which is pretty much exactly what Volkswagen has admitted to with tricking the emissions regulations people at the EPA by installing what is basically called a defeat device. And this device, software-based, will change the emissions output of the engines in basically all of its diesel engine cars that have been sold in the United States for almost a decade, and cooks the books so that the engine only outputs particles that are way below the federally mandated caps. So basically, Volkswagen is able to completely bypass what the actual emissions are coming from the cars and are not having to adjust the engines to actually be clean. Their stock plunged 20% when the revelations came out, and they basically admitted, yeah, we've been doing this, we've been cooking the books. What's impressive about this is the scale at which it has happened, which is to say, thousands, hundreds of thousands of cars potentially involved in this, being sold in the United States and possibly abroad, wherever these kinds of emission standards are being held, it's very likely that this kind of cooking of the books has been happening. Now, the fines that could be levied are pretty insane. At up to $35,000 per car, Volkswagen could be looking at up to $18 billion in fines, with a yearly revenue of somewhere around $12 to $15 billion. This is a massive hit and explains the massive plunge in their stocks that's been happening, because this is a huge risk to their business and it's a major revelation, and you can bet that there's going to be criminal investigations happening and hearings and boycotts, who knows. But it's a huge coup for anybody competing with Volkswagen at the moment. This is just an unprecedented level of manipulation happening in not just, you know, a handful of cars, but entire fleets. This decision being made at the corporate level that, well, they're just going to ignore the emission standards. And it's very concerted. There's no way this could have been an accident. 40 times the emissions that are allowed could be released by these cars in normal operation. 40 times. Orders of magnitude. That's what they were hiding. And it's really, honestly, pretty impressive. So, you know, hacking goes both ways. Software can allow you to take advantage of the constraints that you're given. And sometimes you act creatively and sometimes you act illegally. And Volkswagen acted extraordinarily illegally. Not a lawyer, but sure seems that way. All right, it's time for a little segment I like to call This Week in Privacy. And this one is a doozy. Just reading an article by Kashmir Hill on Fusion.net talking about a recent change to the way Facebook tracks likes. And not just the likes that you click anymore. Back in 2011, they said, we will not use the like buttons that are being embedded on pretty much every single website over the entirety of the web to track where you're visiting. We're going to track it when you click the like button, and we're going to use that information, and we're going to profile you, and we're going to serve you relevant ads. And they said that in 2011, people were kind of freaking out. Are they going to be able to track everything? Naturally, you are already providing them with such a massive wealth of information. This recent change is not going to be much of a surprise. But now, every site that you visit that has a Facebook like button will be reporting on you back to Facebook. And that information will be used to determine what kind of ads to serve to you. So, porn websites, websites with potentially illegal behavior, websites describing your political affiliations, websites where you might be buying maternity clothes and you don't want people to know that you're having a baby, websites where they're selling God knows what. But whatever site you are visiting now, if it has a Facebook like button on it, Facebook can track you and associate those website visits with you, the Facebook user that you are, and send that into their ads API and segment you and profile you and target ads based on the places that you visited. So don't be surprised if all of a sudden, very soon, your ads that you see on Facebook start seeming eerily relevant. Relevant in ways that you might not have shared on Facebook. You might not have told anyone these things, but the ads are going to start getting much more targeted based on everywhere you visit. And I can't honestly think of a place that most people visit that probably doesn't have a Facebook like button on it somewhere. Obviously, a percentage of the net doesn't. There's not going to be a like button on everything, not yet. Not everything has a Facebook page. Getting closer all the time, though. But effectively, the entire popular web, the web where you share articles, the web where you read articles, the BuzzFeeds, the Reddits, the news websites, even the shopping websites that you go to likely have these buttons. And they're all going to be used now to build a rich advertising profile with which to more easily target you. So, you shouldn't be surprised. I'm not. But maybe you're going to start thinking about ad blocking and using incognito mode a lot more than you already were. Well, after that conversation about the likes and the tracking being used to advertise to you, I'm going to change gears into something that maybe I planned to have in this order. But are ad blockers ethical? Is it ethical to install Adblock Plus on your browser? Is it ethical to install any number of JavaScript blockers or different kinds of tools and extensions to your browser that pretty much remove all ads from the videos that you watch, the sides of pages, the rollover ads, the pop-up ads, the embedded links that lead out to different places? Is that ethical? Are you robbing the content makers, which you are visiting, of their hard-earned money? Or are you fighting back against the relentless crush of tracking and incredibly intrusive advertisements and the incredibly heavy page loads now on mobile sites, where it's been a real issue that a lot of sites that have been developed for people who are maybe browsing on robust hardware have been getting lazy, and the page loads for the different sites that you're visiting have ballooned into massive sizes. And sometimes it's taking up to 7 seconds to load a page, like for TheVerge.com, which is itself a large technology publication, but they're not very friendly to their users who are on mobile. And increasingly, that's just about everybody all the time. And what's kicking off this conversation? Well, it's been very hard to block ads on mobile, or it hasn't been very mainstream. In fact, I argue it hasn't even been that mainstream for people who are browsing on the desktop. Power users, like probably all the listeners to this podcast right now, probably have an ad blocker installed. Maybe they have more than one. Maybe they have a JavaScript blocker. But it's not quite to the point. It's not a polished enough experience where the average layman can install it, feel comfortable, and know what they're getting themselves into. That is, until now. So iOS 9 has an update that allows selective content blocking for their native web browser, Safari. So immediately what happened is, developers who found out about this several months ago kicked off their efforts and started to build apps. Apps like Purify and Crystal and Peace. Different apps, all doing pretty much the same thing, which is bringing that powerful ad blocking that already exists on your desktop browser to your phone, and probably improving your browsing experience a lot, probably cutting down on the amount of data that you're using to load the pages that you're already visiting, cutting down on the tracking that's already happening to you that maybe you didn't like, but you didn't know you could do anything about it. But now that it's an app, it's easy, it's within reach, and the general population can just go out and download it and feel relatively secure. Downloading an app for the average person is likely a much more user-friendly experience than adding a Chrome extension or a Firefox add-on. So Apple has basically kick-started this conversation, although it's been ongoing for a while, and there have been some defensive measures by different sites to get you to turn off your ad blocker. There'll be messages that pop up when they detect one and say, hey, we don't run intrusive ads. Why don't you turn off your ad blocker and let us run these ads, and we promise they're not going to be obnoxious. Whereas other sites simply say, hey, we're going to hold this content hostage. Ads are our only revenue. We're not going to show it to you if you have an ad blocker. We're not really going to have a conversation about the quality of the ads that we have or the nature of the tracking around the ads. But it's more of a given. If you are consuming this content, there is a tacit agreement between you and us that you are going to watch these ads and we are going to get paid for them. And this coincides with all kinds of changing market factors, including the fact that the average revenue from an ad is cratering. It's been dropping for a very, very long time. Now, the volume of ads has increased to keep pace. There's ads that are far more native. There's more animated ads. There's ads that pop up in your apps. There's interstitial ads. There's all kinds of advancements that have happened in the arms race to get your attention. But on average, each ad is becoming less effective. And so the volume, naturally, in order to keep making the same amount of money, has to massively increase. And so we're reaching kind of this inflection point in the industry where I think a lot of people are fatigued, or at the very least, if they don't have an ad blocker, they're probably pretty used to avoiding clicking on ads entirely on their own. Some people I know, some coworkers and some friends, tell me that they pretty much just glaze past them. Their eyes don't even register the ads because they've gotten so good at picking out what is the actual content on a page, they've effectively been trained to avoid them entirely. Your brain built its own ad blocker because it doesn't value the content, so it's not going to put in any effort to process it. This coincides with a massive increase in native advertising, where the entire article that you're reading is potentially sponsored, or a paragraph out of that article is sponsored, and it has been written about a specific subject in a specific way in exchange for money. The content has to become the Trojan horse for the advertising, because if you put it on the periphery, if you put it on the margins, if you put it in the banner or an interstitial that pops up over the content, users are going to fight it. And I know I certainly do. And I think this is an interesting intersection for a couple different reasons. There are a lot of large media companies for whom this is a huge issue, but they might have alternate revenue streams. Certainly BuzzFeed, they have venture capital. So they have ad revenue, and I believe they're profitable, but they have venture capital too. And they have the opportunity to explore different ways to monetize their content. But what about that small blog that you follow that talks about fly fishing? You know, they're not going to be able to defend themselves against an ad blocker. Maybe they use a CMS or some kind of software that lets them get a little bit sophisticated with the ways that they're placing advertisements, but they're not really in this arms race. So the moment that these ad blockers become super prevalent with the average mobile web browser, that guy is screwed. They're just totally done for. There's no way for them to get around these ad blockers on an individual level. If you don't have a development team that's smart about sniffing out this kind of software, you're going to have to find an alternate way to fund your content, make money off of your content, and make a living off of it. And maybe the question is that what they should have been doing all along? Do people need to start being more aggressive in charging for the content that they're providing? Is this going to push people into paywalls? Is a patronage system the way? A lot of YouTubers, a lot of podcasters, and people who produce content on semi-regular intervals are turning to things like Patreon that will allow users to pay a monthly stipend. And in a way, it's like buying a subscription to the New York Times, but instead of an entire newspaper, you're buying a subscription to an individual content producer or a small group of content producers. And maybe that's the way forward. Here's what I think, though. I think at a certain point, you push users to the brink. You track them so much, you intrude upon the content that they want so much in such an aggressive way. As an industry, maybe not as an individual website, but as an industry, things have been pushed past the breaking point. And it's to the point where nobody finds any value in these ads as a whole. The number of people who are clicking these ads is dropping. And so I think we've reached this efficacy limit. And content providers need to find a different way to reach out to their readers because they're not having it. And if they know enough about what's going on behind the scenes with these ads, I think they'd be even less excited about seeing them and more enthusiastic about getting these ad blockers into every venue of their life. People pay more for Netflix because it doesn't have ads in between the content. It doesn't interrupt the content. People are willing to pay at least a little bit for the content that they want. And maybe what they're willing to pay isn't enough, but I think now more than ever, it's time to try out that model and figure it out. Thanks so much for tuning in. You've been a wonderful audience. Once again, I'm Johan. You can find me online on Twitter. I'm at Johan Benedict with a K, or find me at www.johancodes.com, where I post a little bit more information from all of these different podcast episodes. Otherwise, I will see you guys bright and early at some point whenever you hit play next week. Thanks a lot. Music provided under Creative Commons license by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.